Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Just a note to say that this podcast contains spoilers and some adult themes.
Hell yeah!
Did you ever take the rice purity test?
Oh no, what is that?
You've never heard of
the rice purity test?
Yeah, rice purity, like Rice University.
Okay.
It's just a university in the US, and they created this purity test where you have to basically take all the things you've done, and it's like a list of like 100 things, and they get spicier and spicier. But it also has things like getting arrested and stuff on it.
Oh my god.
And then
god.
You get a score at the end, and the lower your score, I think the less pure you are. Or like it's the other way around. I don't know. Anyway, this film makes me think of that.
Because it just gets more sexual and more intense as the film progresses.
It's a whole BDSM poly situation.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Come through.
And we're live.
Do I make you nervous, Corky?
I'm a homosexual!
Lesbian.
I'm a homosexual.
I have loved you the way they said!
You fancy gears?
I'm having a proper full-on gay crisis.
Hello and welcome to Gay Actually. Thanks for being here. It's going to be a fun old gay time.
Pitch Perfect is a lesbian musical film.
of course.
I want to carry off badass lesbian chic like Kate Blanchett can.
Welcome.
I haven't done anything particularly gay as of lately.
No.
I think.
Why is my memory so bad? No, COVID.
But
oh wait, no, that
COVID.
Was me.
That was you.
My memory is bad.
Case in point.
Yeah, well I'm just done. Going a bit slow at the moment.
Well, you can make your joke about us being sick.
Yes. Yeah, I'll do the intro. That's a good point. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the UK Film Review Podcast. This week, you've got us, your friends at Gay Actually. Welcome back. We've missed you.
Gay, gay, gay.
Yes, this is the podcasting series for all of your LGBTQ plus film content. My name is Amber, and as always, I am joined by the wonderful and amazing Joyce.
Hi, thank you for that wonderful introduction, Amber.
I like to spice it up every time. Keep it fun. You don't know
well,
what's
spice
coming.
Is on theme. Yeah.
Yes, thank you for having us back on this platform. We also have another series on Spotify, also called Gay Actually. If you want some more film, TV, web series, queer content, we're over there. Check us out. We're also on Instagram at Gay Actually Podcast, so you can check us out there as well. Please do. No one has emailed gayactuallyuk@gmail.com.
Guys, we know that email isn't cool anymore, okay? We all get it. Get out those keyboards. Get typing. Come on. Give us that email signature. Send it from your work email. F around. Oh, sorry. I shouldn't say that. Fudge around. Have fun. I don't know.
As you can see, we are deliriously delirious because yet again, one of us has been ill. It was me.
Wow.
Accidental That's growling. Concerning. Yes, my voice is a bit because I've just had COVID. Literally, we recorded. What day did we record? Was it a Thursday? Wednesday? We recorded virtually because you were still feeling a bit rough. And then literally 2 days later, I had COVID.
I was literally thinking, like,
we didn't even see each other.
That we recorded virtually.
Yeah.
Well, I'll probably get COVID at some point because everyone's getting COVID and everyone's sick. I feel like it's just one pool of germs in the world right now. Like,
London is a petri dish.
Literally. It's everyone I know is sick. And then everyone I know is sick. They get better and then they get sick again.
Which happens to you.
I've been sick for a month.
I know. This is what I'm worried about, is that I just need to not. I'm just going to wrap myself up.
I need to start wintering abroad. Like, next year I'll probably go to Spain.
Do it. Oh. Yeah.
Tenerife. Getting too old for this.
Amen. I'm nearly 26.
Yeah. You are. Oh my God, it's almost your birthday. Mm-hmm. Wow.
We're recording a couple more before my birthday, but yeah.
But soon. Mm-hmm. Tis soon.
Thank you.
No, it's good. It's good. I'm only 6 months away. Well, after you, I only have 6 months of...
This is true. I think 26 might be a little bit of a crisis for me because my mum had me when she was 26.
Dude.
Yeah, and I'm kind of like... Obviously, like, I don't use that as a marker for my life, but it is just kind of mind-blowing that, like, my mum was this age.
My mum was 24 when she had my brother.
Wild.
So
mad respect, because I can't even make myself lunch. I was like, this morning I was like, why do I feel like everything sucks? And I was like, oh, you've not eaten anything today.
Oh, bless.
It was like 11 a.m and I was like, yes,
so tough, isn't it?
Yeah, it's hard being a working woman, functioning
oh my God.
Woman.
I was the same yesterday. The kitchen was busy all night and I just kept waiting and waiting and waiting to go cook. And by the time I actually got to cooking, I was like furious. Like, no one could talk to me. No one could talk to me. I was like furiously like roasting my asparagus. Like,
At least healthy. Healthy.
Yeah, queen. Yeah. I had to get ready to watch that film. I need a first time for that.
Speaking of, excellent segue. Joyce. Which film are we talking about as per your request today?
We are talking about, drumroll, it's definitely in the title, but still drumroll, Professor Marston and the Wonder Women.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I always thought it was Wonder Woman, and then now it makes a lot more sense.
Amber, I'm so happy you mentioned this because to this day, this day being yesterday, I just had no idea what the title of this film was. Like, I kept typing in Dr. Marston and, like, the Wonder Woman, or Dr. Marston's Wonder Woman, or Professor Marston Wonder Woman, Women. I don't know. God, what a title.
It's quite a mouthful of a title. It's quite long. I was looking at it and I was like, because I rented it on YouTube.
Mm.
And I was like, it's Wonder Women. That makes so much more sense.
Right.
So I was like, cool, yeah, he wrote Wonder Woman. Cool, cool, cool. And then I was like, wait.
Really messed with me. Mm-hmm. But anyway, oh my God, I'm so excited to talk about this.
So it came out in 2017, right? Did you watch it when it first came out? Or did you watch it later? Have you watched it multiple times?
I didn't know it existed until... Well, actually, I think I watched it in like 2018 or 19, which is not that long after it came out.
Yeah, I think I'm the same as well. Again, didn't know it existed and then watched it.
Okay, how do we even start? Oh my God, I'm so excited.
I literally don't even know, but I can see your excitement and I feel like we're just going to get into it.
Yeah.
So, as we know, Professor Marsden and the Wonder Women is loosely based on a true story, which I love.
How loose?
So I did some Googling. Not that loose at all. At the center, we have a budding polyamorous relationship with three people. Professor Marsden, who's played by Luke Evans. And then we have Elizabeth Marsden, played by Rebecca Hall. And
Amen.
Then we have one of their students, Olive, who is played by Bella Heathcote. So, I mean, in 1928, William Marsden is lecturing at Harvard. I feel like I just always have to say Harvard like that, and I don't know why. But he's lecturing at Harvard. And what's Elizabeth doing? Is Elizabeth just there?
No, I think she technically is... She's also hired by the university, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm, but they won't let her do her PhD.
They won't give her the PhD, even though she wrote like a thesis.
Sexism.
Mm-hmm.
And Olive is one of their students. And then basically...
What are they lecturing in?
Psychology.
Yeah, sexy. Hot.
Why psychology hot?
Because you're studying the brain, the mind, the soul.
Brain is the sexiest organ.
And, amen. And on top of that, Professor Marsden is studying a theory, or came up with a theory that's just very sexual in nature.
Disk
theory.
Mm-hmm, disk theory. Yeah. Do you want to explain what disk theory is?
So it's, I need to remember it. It's domination. Oof. Domination
or dominance,
influence, steadiness, and no, this is not it. This is probably the modern disc theory.
So the disc theory at the time:
dominance, inducement, steadiness, and compliance.
Ooh, because they talk a lot about submission in the film, as like under the S bracket. So it's like dominance,
which is
the submission
compliance part.
Yeah, you see where we're going with this. But basically at this time, William and Elizabeth are kind of pioneering the early discovery of the lie detector test. They are working on a lie detector device, or what has now become the lie detector device. And they take Olive on as a research assistant. But then things happen. Not how I remember, because I watched this film kind of maybe 2018, 2019. Turns out, remember absolutely nothing from it, but that shouldn't surprise you because my memory has gone to crap. I was watching it and I was like, I don't remember any of this. This is really fun. But I don't remember. So how it plays out is that Olive falls in love with Elizabeth, and that's not how I remember it at all. So I was like, this is so much gayer than I remember. This is great.
Right? So basically, the couple, Elizabeth and William Marsden,
yeah.
Professor Marsden,
yeah.
They, well, definitely, first of all, Professor Marsden really has an eye on Olive. Like, he's so fascinated by her and keeps looking at her. And Elizabeth can tell. And they're clearly very open-minded people, which, I mean, there's psychology researchers, but... Elizabeth even mentions that she doesn't feel any sexual jealousy. So if Professor Marsden wants to pursue her, that's fine by her. Right? So it's kind of open from the start. Like they are pursuing Olive, or at least Professor Marsden is. But then the closer they get to Olive, the more that dynamic shifts. And then we get Olive's perspective into it. And like you say, Olive falls in love with Elizabeth first, I would say. I mean, you could argue that she falls in love with both at the same time. But come on, dude. This stuff she says to Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm. The fact that that's explored first. Because, like, there's this real, like, awkwardness and, like, stiltedness between Elizabeth and Olive. And at first, like, I personally thought that the first half of the film, like, the acting was really awkward and really stilted. Like, and I didn't enjoy it. I enjoyed the second half a lot more. And there's a pivotal moment where that changes for me, and we'll talk about that later. But the first half of the film, I was like, this is really like I'm not really getting the performance. Like, Elizabeth and Olive aren't really gelling for me. And then I kind of went away and thought about it. And I was like, wait, is that because they're trying to suss each other out? And there's this kind of like relationship between what they refer to as sexual jealousy versus professional jealousy, where it's like, how is Olive interacting with them? Is it to do with professionalism or is it to do with sex and sexuality? And you kind of see that as Olive and Elizabeth's relationship to each other progresses. And then later in connection with William as well, it's kind of like, what's happened? What are their motivations? What's happening? There's like all these questions of boundaries swirling around.
So many questions. You're so right about that. And there's so much staring between Olive and Elizabeth, which I will die on the hill of staring is like the best thing in lesbian cinema. Like,
listen to our episode with Queer Girl Film Club to find out more about the staring trope in queer film.
I love staring so much. And there's a lot of staring in this. And like you say, there's a lot of questions about boundaries and about sexual jealousy, professional, basically everything you just said. And then we get Olive's background as well. Like, we get to know that she has a fiance and there's absolutely zero chemistry between the two of them. 0.0 chemistry.
Honestly, they've really just focused in on this like trajectory of thruple, because he is so irrelevant. I was like, bye.
So
like
irrelevant.
Everything you're saying, your lines are terrible. And I want you off the screen.
Like, from very early on, we also kind of get the dichotomy of his relationship to Olive and their relationship to Olive, because just through the lens of, for example, the sorority, like, his relationship to Olive in regards to the sorority is, this is how they met. He's in a frat, she's a sister, that's how they met. And then the relationship of them to Olive in regards to sorority is sexual in nature.
Mm-hmm. It's a like tale as old as time. That's how all of these women, you know, they go to these incredible universities and meet these men and then never work. Olive went to Harvard and then she's like, you know, expected to be like the housewife and all that jazz.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh God, tale as old as time. But then there's this, like, the three of them. Fair play to the film. There aren't that many films that I don't know of any. Correct me if I'm wrong. That kind of represent a three-way relationship, a relationship with three people.
Dude, I haven't seen a single other one.
No, I haven't seen another one either, which is why I think I kind of was watching it and I was like trying to figure out how I kind of felt when I was watching it. And they're just so intrigued by each other. There's just so much. I wouldn't call it voyeurism, but also it's kind of a bit like, you know, they're making sure that everyone is looking, but they like being looked at. So yeah, okay, it's voyeurism. But like, yeah.
Definitely. And that, sorry, not to bring it back to the sorority scene, but that is 100%.
Okay. Let's talk about the sorority scene, because that's one of the first moments where we kind of see, oh, there's actually something sexual going on here. And this is before Olive kind of admits that she's in love with Elizabeth or like wants to be with either of them. Let's unpack that first.
Okay, let's describe the scene in case anyone hasn't seen it without getting banned.
people can watch the film and then
yeah, well, okay, just to put it in nice terms, Olive helps Elizabeth and William sneak into her sorority because they're just so curious about that experience and they want to see what actually happens inside. And that happens to be pledge night or whatever.
Oh yeah,
so
like
all
the
pledges.
Initiation
type thing. And Olive is one of the pledge masters or whatever. I don't know what they're called.
I don't know how sororities work.
Listen, I'm not American. Olive's pledge does something bad, so Olive has to punish her by hitting her with a paddle. And the two professors sitting a floor up are watching this happen. And their reaction to it is very
intense.
Visceral. Intense.
But Olive sees them looking, doesn't she? But I couldn't.
She sees and she keeps eye contact, and it's so outrageous.
Good point.
And hot.
Because I've that whole time I was like, what is Olive thinking? What is Olive thinking? Like, I'm trying to figure out what she's thinking because she's quite a quiet character at first. And you're kind of like, what are you doing here? And then all of a sudden it's like, she's got these two, hook, line and sinker, and she doesn't even know it. She doesn't even realize how much power she holds over them. And that's kind of the start of her journey to learning that actually she's not just submissive. And likewise with Elizabeth and William, that they're both very, very dominant people. But that's what the film's really good at. It's kind of flip-flops the narrative between, like, yes, you can be dominant, but you can also be submissive. I'm not just talking in a sexual way. There's other things at play in the film to do with feeling dominant and feeling submissive that they kind of have to interrogate. Also, the whole time I did have the disc theory thing written down from the film in my notes. Dominance, inducement, submission, compliance is how they refer to it in the film. But the sorority scene, there's lots of reference to babies and it makes me very uncomfortable.
It's so weird.
I don't understand.
It was 1928.
Yeah, okay.
They're having a baby party. They're basically all dressed as babies, the sorority sisters. This is why the f***ing is... Oh, I didn't say that earlier.
That's okay.
Anyway, so this is what happens in a scene. This is why there's the f***ing, because it's like a child punishment. Obviously now this is weird. Mm-hmm. But back then...
But then to like sexualize that?
But they're all adults.
Mm, yeah.
And they don't sexualize it in the ritual. It's the other two that are sitting on the balcony that sexualize it.
Yeah, good point. Ooh.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers.
Yeah. We kind of move forward a little bit to when they're kind of establishing their theories to do with the lie detector test. They start studying bodily response in relation to lying and truth. It's very Masters of Sex, I've got to say, that kind of measuring a heart rate and the body's response. It's very like, but then I like the line where William says, your body will always betray you. And then that kind of leads to them testing the lie detector test. Are you in love with my husband? All this kind of shenanigans.
Yeah, they're very straightforward and honest, and you can tell that they're very intrigued, all three of them. So mm-hmm. they go for the questions that matter. And Olive even makes a whole point of it that the lie detector doesn't work if there's no stakes in it. So they really get at what's been happening under the covers, you know, all this tension building between them. So they use this lie detector kind of as a medium to get it out in the open. Because, I mean, you have to think about this. It's 1928. Obviously, polyamory does not exist like it does now.
Mm-hmm.
Now we know about it. Back then, I'm sure that was so taboo. They even say it's legal, right? Like, it's just super taboo, more than homosexuality, I would say, right? Which is also present in this. So just like kind of not having the, especially Olive, you can tell, like, she doesn't have the words to even describe the way she's feeling. The other two are more open and a bit more older, so they can see that, okay, sexual pleasure, da 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 da.
Yeah. Also, they have such a larger understanding of psychology and, like, you know, that makes them more open as well.
Exactly.
That they understand these things from an academic level, so they don't see it as wrong. Which it isn't.
That's it. I mean, and Olive doesn't really, I don't think she sees it as wrong either. She's actually very open as well. She just mm-hmm. doesn't have as much knowledge, I think, or she doesn't quite... She's very eager to explore, and this is what I love so much about her character, is that she doesn't shy away from exploring, and she doesn't shy away from, like, jumping into the deep end. She just does it.
I think,
and it takes
a
while to develop those thoughts, and this is why the lie detector is like the medium they use to bring it to the forefront.
Yeah, I don't think I appreciated that as much in the first half of the film. And then kind of when you progress further into the film, like everything you've said, I kind of have more of an appreciation for actually her character is going through quite a lot of change in quite a short space of time. And it's really interesting to watch how, because obviously William and Elizabeth, they have such, as you said before, such a mutual respect for each other and such an understanding. They've known each other a long time. And the way Olive just kind of slots into that is really interesting, and how it's just like such a non-issue for her to kind of come into a pre-existing marriage. Right. And like disrupt that, but not in a, I don't mean disrupt in like a, in a negative way. It's, yeah, it's really interesting. Like, I've never seen, I know it came out in 2017, but I've never seen another film kind of tackle that in that way before. And not like a having an affair negative kind of way. It's like very sex positive and affirming.
Mm.
It's quite nice. Yeah. It's refreshing to kind of see that.
And I think this is why it's important to have her fiancé in it just for a little bit, was because it really shows that contrast of this is how it's supposed to be and this is how she differs. Because
mm-hmm.
otherwise, maybe, I mean, I don't know. Obviously, it's still a bit of a... Okay, as a non-polyamorous person, which I think is a lot of people, right? It's still kind of wild to imagine it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know if you agree, but in a negative way. It's just like, wow, this is definitely out there. But see, imagine that in the context of 1928, when you're not even allowed to be gay.
In the States, like in Europe, like in Paris, I'm like, yeah, whatever. But like in such a religiously charged country and like in such a environment, like, and you know, they do have consequences throughout the film. William and Elizabeth lose their jobs. And things happen later down the line as they get more entwined in each other's lives. And yeah, it's interesting to see from that context. Whereas now, like, I was trying to think, I don't know many examples of polyamory in my own life. Again, not polyamorous. But I think people still do view it as taboo. Not in the same way and to the same extent. Obviously, it's not against the law to be polyamorous. But yeah, it's still interesting to think about in a contemporary context.
Yeah, and I think it's even more rare because it's, they're like a throuple. They're one big relationship.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, how I know some people that are poly, but they have like a main partner and then they date on the side.
Yeah. Or, yeah.
Like that. But this is like a formation of a relationship with three people that are equally in a relationship.
Yeah.
Like this is like, it's just... Like, it's so hard to imagine, right?
It's crazy. It's a lot rarer for everyone to kind of be, like, coexisting in the same space.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Love it.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah, well, as we were saying, the plot twist is that Olive falls in love with Elizabeth. Well, admits that she's fallen in love with Elizabeth first.
I see you in everything you do. That's what she says. I see you in everything you do. God, like, literally stop.
A woman saying that to you, like, please.
The fact that Elizabeth didn't jump on Olive that moment.
Well,
girl is strong. She's strong.
I also, it took me a while to realize that she's English.
No way, she has a British accent.
No, well, her accent was really weird, like that, because obviously there's like a little twang in there. But then she said that she's from the Isle of Man, and I was like, what a rogue reference to be in this film. I love. Then yeah, of course she was
rogue.
She was born in the Isle of Man, but she was raised in the States.
Yeah,
I love it. Represent English queens.
Mm.
Yeah, there's a line, I can't remember who says the line, but the line is "suffering Sappho," and I feel like that encapsulates Elizabeth's journey a lot. We all can relate to the suffering Sappho.
Yeah. Can we talk about when Olive admits to Elizabeth that she's in love with her?
Please.
So, okay, basically, they're doing the lie detector stuff all over again, right? This is the moment where Elizabeth asks her husband, who is attached to the machine, if he's in love with Olive. And he says no, but obviously the machine starts fluttering up and down. Yeah, and Elizabeth experiences jealousy. And she gets mad. She says, like, this is done. This is over. She runs out of the room. Olive, Olive, who is in love with Elizabeth, runs after Elizabeth, follows her into a room. Elizabeth is like, no, this is over. Get your coat, get your stuff, get out. This is done. Do you not understand? Olive is like, no, you got it wrong. There's nothing going on between him and me. I love you. I love you. And she goes up to Elizabeth and she kisses her. And sorry, Elizabeth, the little sweetheart, kisses her back. Mm-hmm. Kisses her back. And then suddenly, like, pushes her away. Is like, ah, get out.
She just gives in to her desires for a split second. Enough for the audience member to be like, plot twist. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Seriously.
But that was kind of an anticlimax for me. The thing that, well, I've got a quote before this moment that I assume William says at some point, together you are the perfect woman.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ah, ah, okay. So again, the issues of free love, like William is able to have that perspective where he's got, although to be honest, all of them have it, where they've kind of got like different parts of like different, I don't know how to explain, but you know how for William, like, Elizabeth is like this like cutthroat, cutting edge, like wicked intelligent academic, and then Olive is still intelligent and wonderful, but she's kind of like offers the sweeter side, the more kind of gentle and maternal side. So I can kind of see why he says that, but it was also like, whoa, that's a big thing to throw out there. But anyway,
yeah.
So
yeah.
The first kiss I was between Elizabeth and Olive, I was kind of like, nah, that was going to happen. Cool. What changed the game for me with this film? Because this whole time, I'm kind of taking it all in. I'm kind of like, yeah, it's okay. But the moment that changes my whole outlook, where the switch is flipped, is when they are in that auditorium. They run into the auditorium, Elizabeth and Olive, and they have this huge, passionate kiss. And William walks in on them, and they stop kissing. And Elizabeth turns to see William, and she holds out her hand, and he goes to join them. And the three of them are standing together. That, for me, is the turning point. That was the moment where I was like, okay, now this is good. This, like, the film has woken up.
You needed a threesome for it to get good.
It's just that moment where I think for me it's
so
like,
good.
I think for me it's Olive in that moment, because all of, like, I was kind of like, she's kind of a meh character, like she's the in my head, without meaning to, I'd kind of had her as the other woman. But in that auditorium, when she grabs Elizabeth and she kisses her, it's like something has been unlocked in her. Like, suddenly she's woken up, and suddenly she has the power to seduce both William and Elizabeth. She's got the upper hand. And that's when I was like, yes, okay, got it. Mm.
Oh, it's so good.
Because we see the disc theory shifting and all of the things. It's in motion.
God. This follows a scene where basically they have this whole break where they don't talk to each other for a while, right? After what just happened that we just talked about, the first kiss. Mm-hmm. And then Olive goes back just in the middle of the night and she's like, I don't know what I'm doing here. And they put her on the lie detector, and William asks her, are you in love with me? And Olive says, no, she's lying. He asks, are you in love with Elizabeth? She says, no, she's lying. And then she feels like she's being put on the spot and they're just there to make her feel uncomfortable or make fun of her. Mm-hmm. So she runs away. And then it's Elizabeth that follows. So it switches around.
Yeah. Is that then when they kiss in the auditorium at that point?
Yeah. Then they walk into the auditorium.
Elizabeth is chasing after her. She wants her. Yeah. Like, as you say, it switches. That's when the film wakes up for me. Because I'm like, ah, yes, okay.
Also, that scene. Yeah. That first scene where they're all together in a sexual way. It's so good because it's just
very
fun.
Well done. Like, the camera,
it's
kind
fun.
Of
fun.
Yeah, it kind of gives them all equal time, which
that's
is nice.
It. Yeah,
equality
and yeah,
that's a good.
So
scene.
Yeah, anyway, from that moment on, they're obviously together as a throuple, and this causes some issues because they're not very discreet, which is exactly what Olive's fiance tells her. Still her fiance, by the way. Still engaged. Still engaged.
But also, I just love, first of all, that they're so obsessed with each other, the three of them, they just can't hide it. I'm like, fair right. play. They're just all over each other. There's like a montage of them like nudging each other and like whispering to each other like in public, and you're like, oh my god, raunchy.
Literally being so indiscreet. So yeah, fiance comes to visit Olive at her sorority house and is like, you didn't even try to hide it. They're not even trying to be discreet. No, and nothing is mentioned. He doesn't say what it is. She doesn't need to know. Everyone knows what they're talking about.
But also,
she just gives the ring back.
I know, I was going to say, she doesn't say anything. She just takes her ring off and hands it back to him. And I was like, power move, Olive. I actually love that.
She's like, I'm getting the best end of my life. I don't need you anymore.
Bye, random irrelevant fiancé man, which I can't remember the name of.
Who can? Who cares?
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And then he goes. Too vanilla for her.
Yeah, too fun. Vanilla. She's tasted mint choc chip now. Like
my favorite ice cream flavor.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. What is my favorite ice cream flavor? It always used to be like honeycomb. Like the one you get in Cornwall, like the Cornish ice cream honeycomb.
That sounds amazing.
Or like the caramel with like bits in.
As a for being vegan, I love honeycomb.
Yeah.
I will eat it.
I think there's a good vegan mint choc chip in Tesco.
Oh, I should try that.
You should.
I'm gonna try that. I will.
Okay, anyway. Now she's tasted mint choc chip. She doesn't want vanilla anymore.
Oh god, no. Yeah, because she can get mint and choc chip at the same time. Oh, God. What more would you want? And it's working out great because guess what? They get fired and then Olive gets pregnant.
I wrote on my notes, but then she is pregnant and they are ruined, lost jobs and prospects. And why is that so Pride and Prejudice? I'm 27 years old. I've got no money and no prospects. I'm a burden girl, to same. My parents and I'm frightened.
Oh, wow. Did you see that Pride and Prejudice turned 25 years old like a few days ago?
Oh my god.
The film, not the book.
Happy birthday, PMP.
Happy birthday.
Oh my god, actually, I should check our Twilight poll whilst I'm here.
Oh, I voted.
I knew it was you. I knew it was you. We had one vote on the day of the podcast going up.
Twas me.
Yeah. Now we have... Oh, we still have one vote.
Tis I. But let this be a sign to go to our Gay Actually channel, listen to our latest episode, and vote on the Twilight poll. There's only one right answer, and that answer is yes. Thank you for listening.
On our latest episode, go and have a look, do all the things. So anyway, now we've had that little ad break.
That's what it felt like, right?
Let's get back to Professor Marsden and the Wonder Women.
So yeah, pregnant and jobless. So the three of them move to the suburbs, or suburbia, I don't know. They're kind of struggling for money. Olive is living with them because she's pregnant and they're just running out of money. So Elizabeth gets a job as a secretary, and Professor Marston tries a million times to come up with some type of book that will sell copies, right? Then Olive gives birth, and when they're all in the hospital together, it's just the sweetest little moment.
It's so cute.
They just look like a family. And Elizabeth and William are just so, just very emotional and like very, it's all very tender. And you can kind of, well, they say it. They say like, yeah, we're a family. We're going to make this work.
Yeah.
And one thing that I loved so much, and this is before this, this is when they found out that Olive is pregnant, is that William tells Elizabeth that it's her child too. Just because he's the one with the swimmers, it's Elizabeth's child just as much, because they literally all did it together in the same place at the same time.
How nice is that?
Like, it's just that's so actually, amazing.
It's actually kind of magical. I love that. And that's the thing that really struck me about the film as well. And then the real life story, because in real life, this actually did happen. Elizabeth and Olive have two children each with William. So Olive has two boys with William, and Elizabeth has a boy and a girl with William. But the thing about it is that they all raise, there's no jealousy. There's no like, well, my mummy, my mama. It's equal. They've got a dad. They've got two mums. No one kind of holds one thing over the other. Like, they're all their own children equally. They've all got four children. And I think that's really nice.
Yeah, it's
amazing. I really love how they represent that in the film. And in real life, I did some research, and William and Elizabeth did adopt Olive's children. So legally, they were their children as well. Which I was thinking, I wonder how that worked, like with the birth certificate or whatever. Legally, can you have three parents listed at that time?
Maybe if they played it off like Olive did to the neighbors, which is that her husband died and the Marstons took her in.
Yeah, maybe
in that way they could adopt the children.
Yeah, but it was just nice to kind of see that represented in the film as it happened in real life. So they're all one big happy family. But then what happens? What happens?
A bunch of rope.
I was going to say, talk to me about the rope, girl.
So Professor Marston, aka William, is strolling down the street and stops upon a 18 plus looking shop with corsets, burlesque outfits in the window. He walks in and he says that he wants to buy a burlesque outfit for his wife for Halloween, which, I mean, dude, pop off. That's hot. Love it. Love it. We'll do this for next year's Halloween if I'm married by then. Let's see. I'm kidding.
Oh!
Totally kidding. That was like, not what? An announcement. Totally kidding.
I was like, what's happening? And is that the way you choose to tell me? Outrageous. Imagine. Outrageous. I would have been fuming.
Anyway. So we're in the shop. And the French shopkeeper with the mustache is like, are you part of the... the club. It's kind of like, are you a friend of Dorothy? But then in a kinky way instead of a homosexual way. Oh, let me show you some fee from France. Professor Marston, William, goes home with all this porn, which, by the way, I literally had to pause the screen to look at this porn because I was like, there's no way this is just on the screen. It's pornography.
Yeah. But
it's like super explicit.
It's like 30s photography, so it's like little drawings. Yeah, discreet drawings. Like, I don't know why I'm doing this, as if you can see, but like the size of a coaster, like just sexy drawings.
Exactly. Doing crazy stuff. And some photographs as well. Anyway, the two women, the girlfriends, the two women are like, why did you bring this home? Like, what? Why did you bring this home? And he's like, no, it's for research for my disc theory. Look, this is one image shows everything from D, I, S, C. Do you know what I mean?
And they're like, sure, your research.
They're like, stop thinking with your
I just, the way she says it actually made me lull. Like, stop feeding your fantasies.
Exactly.
And calling it research. Because valid, call him out.
Yeah.
Dirty man.
That reminds me of when I took that class at Indiana University where we literally watched in
Wait,
class.
What? I think you have told me this, but I just wasn't.
It was called Sex in the Media. And everyone knew that when you sign up for this class in week 6, we watch in the classroom.
Wow.
Anyway, it was wild. It was wild. And then we write essays about it.
Film theory is weird.
It is. I mean, they literally mentioned Freud in this film and penis envy.
Yeah.
Film theory, there's a lot of old
phallic
theory still in film theory. Yeah. You know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We don't need to talk about Freud anymore, in my opinion, but that's just me.
I think that's how Freud quota reached. Moving on.
Really, like, yeah. And, like, is it still relevant? I don't know. Even Elizabeth, in 1928, didn't think it was relevant. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I trust Elizabeth's judgment.
That's it. Anyway, moving on from the talk. Professor Morrison convinces the ladies, his girlfriend / wife and wife, to go to this shop with him and go to like a type of bondage workshop is how I would put it.
Yeah. And you know
what? It looks like a workshop, right?
Yeah. Fair play. There are still workshops, events. They're all very safe, all very consensual. I've never personally been interested, but I have a very sex positive attitude. You do you. Love that for you. But yeah, this is like a not very regulated, really random, looks like a weird circus workshop thing.
It does look like a circus. It's also in like the back room of this sex shop, and yeah. It's all very legal and undercover. And you have to be like, Dr. Morrison meets this guy. This is how he gets in. But I'm sure it's like, you need someone to get you in there, blah, blah, blah type of situation.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's what I love so much. And This makes me feel sad. Like, this is the type of stuff that I will think about and then I will get a bit sad, is that it's so natural the way this all happens. Like, no one is exposed to any of this. They find out about this in a very natural, organic way, which is impossible now. Like, you can't. Like, you learn what BDSM is when you're, like, 12, right? Like, is it just me? Or, like...
I don't think I was that young, but...
But I'm just saying, it's really nice to see a scenario where this type of sexual exploration happens in a way that is not so forced or fabricated like I feel that it is now.
Yeah. No, I see
what
you're
saying.
Makes
it feel authentic and interesting. And this is why I love those scenes, because you can see this revelation that is something that just doesn't exist in this world anymore. Like, you don't have those kind of, I don't know. Maybe I'm just exaggerating, but it makes me feel like it's just an experience that we can't have. And
yeah.
I'm being very emotional about BDSM, which I'm really not. I'm just putting way too much weight on this subject.
I know what you mean, though, as a broader theme. Like, we don't really, as people, just stumble across things anymore.
No.
Like, everything is out there for us to access, which is great in some ways, but like, we'll never have that thing again. I don't know what that is, but I want to find out, kind of thing. I don't know. I didn't phrase that very well.
And there's something, but that's true, and there's something so exciting about it, and you can tell in them. And what I love so much about this scene is, so Olive discovers that she's a submissive, right? And she's so fascinated by this woman being tied up in front of her in a way that Elizabeth isn't at all. So you have this really stark contrast between the two.
Yeah.
And Olive volunteers to go and be tied up.
Mm-hmm.
But she really wants it. And you can see that excitement and that intrigue and interest. And this is why I love so much. I was like, wow. Go, Olive. Go. Oh. Well, okay. My word just stopped halfway.
Oh!
I was going to say go, Olive. And then I was going to say go off. And then I just stopped. But yeah, anyway, I really like that scene for that reason, not because it's bondage, just because of that initial discovery.
Yeah. It's great, but Elizabeth doesn't have a very good reaction to it, does she? And I was trying to figure out if it was because she wasn't into it, or if it was because she thought that Olive felt like she had to do it. Like, if Olive felt like she had to be submissive. And she was like, are you sure this is what you want?
Yeah.
And it kind of wasn't in like a judgmental, hateful way. It was kind of in like a, are you okay? We don't, you know, our sex doesn't have to include this.
Right, yeah. And also that, I think there was a bit of a feminist thing to it as well, of don't let a man tie you up like that. Like, yeah. You don't need to submit to a man. And that kind of distinguishing, like, submission in the world or submission sexually, that Elizabeth wasn't quite there yet. But she does come around very soon, kind of in the same scene.
Yeah. And you know what?
I mean, it's like, literally that theory that he has been focused on his entire life. This is literally it, right?
Yeah. Hypothesis proven.
With my two wives and my rope.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, this is the birth of Wonder Woman.
Yes, I was going to say, we haven't talked about Wonder Woman. And it's very much intertwining, so to speak, pardon the pun, fantasy with reality. Wonder Woman comes from bondage, ?
Apparently, yeah, about polyamorous bondage.
Yeah, and William injects his ideas of psychology into these comic books that he comes up with. He's not a practicing psychology professor anymore, so he thinks, do you know what? I'll write a comic book and I'll call her Wonder Woman, and goes to the guy that has got made famous for Superman, and they create the Wonder Woman comics. And it goes really well at first. They're very, very popular. But then soon kind of Wonder Woman starts getting banned because
there's too many
depictions. Yep, moral panic, exactly. And there's too many depictions of bondage and queerness, sexual tension, all that fun stuff.
Also, Wonder Woman, the suffering Sappho.
Amen. I could talk about Wonder Woman all damn day. Our lovely friends at the Phantom Zone podcast have more of the nerdy comic book perspective. So maybe we should reach out to them and talk about Wonder Woman in more depth. But I really do think there's something to be said for the lack of bisexual representation of Wonder Woman. Like, where is she? Hello? Why am I not seeing enough? Because it's quite clear that Wonder Woman is a queer, polyamorous person. If this film is anything to go by.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. But also, she lives on an island with all women, and then a man falls onto the world or the island. I didn't explain it very well.
Sounds like my dream island. Dream vacation.
An all women
island.
It's
like a gay cruise, but for lesbians.
Yes, it's like that episode in The L Word where they're on that gay cruise, but on an island.
When is that?
In the original L Word, they go on this queer boat party. I was going to say Dana's still alive, but that's a fat L Word spoiler.
Because after Dana dies, I've barely seen anything.
Well, Dana's still alive during this, so it must be before season 3. But it's when she's with Tanya.
Mm-hmm.
And then her and Alice are like secretly hooking up. Sorry, I'm so sorry if you've not seen The L Word. Start watching.
Bye now, come on.
Yeah. So it's kind of like that. But yeah, what did you think of the whole kind of... I don't know comics that well, but I know gay stuff well. And gay comics, I mean, yeah, I don't know if it was... Anyway, blah, blah, blah. What do you think of all of that kind of... them kind of implying that his life informed Wonder Woman?
Dude, like, for real, I understand where this woman's coming from, like, trying to raise issues about Wonder Woman, and not because of the queerness, but looking at some of the images that were in this film. But then again, okay, I feel like it's hard from our perspective, because you're seeing how his sexual life influences these comics for kids,
yeah, right?
So that's difficult. But then I read a lot of comics when I was a kid, Belgian comics, and people were tied up all the time. And I never, ever thought anything sexual about that. Because as a kid, you don't look at a rope and think, ooh, bondage. You know what I mean?
As so, a kid, no, you look at a rope and you go, rope.
Exactly. You think, oh no, oh, kidnapping. Like, mm-hmm. No. So I don't think that comics did any harm to any children.
No.
But I'm saying that with a very uninformed opinion. I don't know. I'm just trying to think about my own personal experience.
It's something that's worth thinking about, and I'm sure comic book enthusiasts and experts have kind of spoken about it, but like how content in comic books affects or influences kids and that kind of thing. But again, I agree with you. I don't really see it as a threat. If it was a male protagonist, they wouldn't be saying those things. Like, hand on heart, that's just what I believe. I think if it was a man dealing with these issues in a comic book, I don't think the moral panic would have been as intense. It's when women are portrayed, even though she's a fictional woman, well, fictional to an extent, according to this film, but like, when a woman is portrayed as being dominant, aggressive, powerful over men, that's when the moral panic kicks in. So I'm with you.
That's it.
Yeah. I was gonna say that a brief history of Wonder Woman, as they kind of talk about at the end of the film, when the films have the text come up for like added historical context in the biopics, love it. From what I remember, Wonder Woman was banned in the 40s for its inappropriate content. But then in the 70s, early 70s, Gloria Steinem reintroduces Wonder Woman to the American magazine. And this is the time where second wave feminism in the United States is really popping off. So Gloria Steinem's like, hey, Wonder Woman, remember this thing from 30 years ago that you all hated? Here she is. And then Wonder Woman became iconic.
And who knew all along behind Wonder Woman were two women in a polyamorous relationship?
Honestly, iconic. Live, love, love it. Love to see the queer undertones, which is why I'm like, can someone please just make an explicitly queer Wonder Woman, please?
Right.
Thank you. That's all I ask. And then we'll actually have some queer comic book content to talk about with the Phantom Zone, our lovely friends.
So true.
Shout out, guys.
Yeah, it's like you say, the queerness is so nice in this film.
Much more positive William than also, I remember.
Yeah, also want to like point out that William really isn't overbearing as the man in the relationship. Like, he very much respects and even puts like his women on a pedestal almost, you know. I mean, he writes a comic book about them.
Yeah, that's so true. That's such a refreshing representation of a man. You know, actually, he respects them both so much in so many ways. And you're right, because there's a scene where Elizabeth and Olive are getting a bit cheeky. And he kind of gets home and then sees this and then kind of lingers in the doorway and waits to be invited in. And I was like... Yeah. I like that. But he doesn't just like throw himself into the action, that he's kind of like, oh, they're having a nice moment. Oh, I can join. Okay, cool. And it's nice that they all just, again, they all have that respect for each other. They're all equal players. Do you want to talk about the like...
How they get found out?
Yes. Yeah.
we follow them in their domestic life for a good amount of time because the kids are getting old. Like, I think even 15 years or something, we just see them grow up.
Yeah.
And they're making it work. It's all good. And then one day, Olive convinces Elizabeth to stay home from work. And they are playing as adults. And one of the neighbors so kindly made a delicious dish, I'm sure.
Yeah, but why did she invite herself in?
I don't know, suburbia. Anyway, this woman walks in with a casserole and she walks into a scene of Elizabeth and William tied up and Olive standing next to them dressed as a nurse.
Let's not even begin to unpack that.
Dude, I thought she was going to drop the casserole, but instead she just covers her eyes and she's like,
the devil is in the room.
Exactly. Oh, and then, well, yeah, from then, obviously everything goes sour. So the kids are being harassed at school, are being assaulted at school. And then William goes over to confront the neighbors, and they say that they should just take their kids out of school, and that they should involve their kids in this abominable lifestyle. And
they
all
get
this
called
stuff.
Freaks. Oh.
They're called freaks. They're fighting. Yeah, everything turns really bad. And then Elizabeth, her character is just very, like, I'm not going to say rigid. That's not the word. But she's very, like, very logical, very rational, very matter of fact.
That's a good point. Yeah. Because she surprised me in this scene, but you're right. Yeah, it is because she just thinks things through.
That's it. Like, she really separates emotion from fact. I want to say that's not it.
But yeah, no, anyway, I know what you mean.
So she tells Olive that she needs to go, which is heartbreaking because Olive has been part of this family for what, 15 years at this point.
Yeah, and Olive's never seen herself as a woman.
That's it. But just because she came in later and she's not actually part of the marriage, she's the one that has to go. Mm-hmm. So really, really sad. And then...
Hate that bit.
Yeah. Then we just get a moment in time where we see, like, the kids... They're all still seeing each other, and Olive brings the kids over, and she's clearly building a life somewhere else, which we don't really see. And then William gets ill. Do you have anything else to say before we get into that part?
I just think that the whole thing where Olive is absolutely heartbroken, and William doesn't want her to leave. He tries to stop her from leaving because she takes her two sons, or their two sons. And so
he doesn't want to break up. Yeah.
No, he doesn't want to break up, but because, and that's the only, like, throuple conflict that we get, is that he doesn't want this. It's something that the two women have decided, or Elizabeth's decided. That's the only, like, key, like, polyamorous conflict, in my opinion. But then Olive kind of, she's like, oh, I am the other woman. And that's not a very nice realization for her to have, that she's the one that has to go because she's not the one that's married to William. Mm-hmm. And that's very sad. But yes, then, as you were saying, William gets unwell, and that kind of changes things.
Yeah. So William gets cancer, which, I mean, this man is smoking like nonstop this entire film. It's like, dude, no judgment, just observation. Yeah, so William gets sick, and bless her, Elizabeth calls Olive the night that he gets taken to the hospital, and we see Olive actually be with them for that moment. And then after, we kind of figure out that Olive hasn't been back, and it's been 2 months.
Yeah.
And then...
Crazy.
They invite her over, and turns out... Well, this I love this part where William tells Elizabeth that he needs to let her talk for she needs to let him talk for 3 minutes without interruption.
Yeah, I
and
love
Elizabeth's
that.
Like, yeah, fine. And then William's like, Elizabeth wants you back. Blah blah blah. Starts talking for Elizabeth. She's losing it because she can't speak. Anyway,
that bit's so funny when she's like,
it's so funny
when she's a woman that loves to talk. I mean, woman after my own heart. But then when you just see her, like, seething inside, I just thought that was very funny. But he doesn't have to do that. He doesn't have to force that reconciliation because he knows he's dying. And for him to do that and, you know, make sure that his girls are back together and all the children can be together before he goes is really heartwarming, is that it proves that his motivation has been the two of them all along. They are the most important.
Yeah, he makes Elizabeth get down on her knees and beg. He gets down on his knees too. They beg Olive together to come back. And it's such a powerful moment because...
they're submitting to her.
Exactly. So there we have the whole disc theory.
Compliance.
Exactly. But also he tells her, you don't always have to be dominating. He says to Elizabeth.
Yes.
And it's only when she finally submits that Olive... forgive her.
It's so clever. It's actually so clever. I don't think I gave this film enough credit. But like the fact that, as I kind of said at the start of this episode, they have to learn, like Olive has to learn to voice what she wants. And she does at the end. She said, you know, I want this and I want this. You know, these are my demands. And they're both like, okay. You know, she kind of learns that she can be more dominant. And then Elizabeth learns that, you know, sometimes I do have to sit back and submit. And like those kind of opposite trajectories are really, really interesting to watch unfold throughout the film. And yeah. And that's it. William dies and Elizabeth and Olive in real life continue to live together, raise their children, and they live together for 38 years until Olive passes away. And Elizabeth dies aged 100.
Yes.
Like crazy, Olive, right? Olive dies, but then Elizabeth doesn't die for another several years. Like just after her 100th birthday. Crazy. Mm-hmm. But that's I like knowing that they stay together, or at least they live together.
Yes, of course. It's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, it's a good ending. Obviously, Marston dies, but...
Yeah, that is sad.
Did you cry in this film?
No. Did you cry?
I cried. I cried when they beg Olive for forgiveness.
You cried at that
point? I was like, oh my God. Yeah, I did.
It was very heartwarming.
It was intense. Yeah. It was intensely emotional. I cried a little bit. I cried.
I understand that though. Like it was a very moving moment where when you're in a relationship with someone, Elizabeth learns that in her relationship she has to let her guard down and be vulnerable in order for it to work. Because this is the thing, is that if you don't show your partner all of you, like if you don't allow yourself to be vulnerable, then it's not going to work. And so like it is a very emotional moment where all three of them let their guards down simultaneously.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so nice. It's so nice. I didn't expect to like feel so moved by a polyamorous relationship, because I've never seen one on screen before. I don't think I've seen another one since on screen. If anyone's got any recommendations.
No, but you know that film that's coming out with Zendaya called Challenger? I don't know if that's actually poly. I don't think it is.
No. Yeah.
She definitely has a threesome.
Ah. Well, if it's a poly relationship, then we'll have to review it. If it's not, sad times.
Romantic sports comedy drama.
Okay. Sports comedy.
But it's directed by the guy that did Call Me By Your Name.
Oh. So maybe it's a little fruity.
Well, maybe. But anyway, he's a great director.
Yeah, very good director. That the whole feel of Call Me By Your Name, I'm like sweating. Like I'm in Italy, you know?
Exactly.
Love it.
Anywho,
final thoughts on Professor Marston and the Wonder Women.
It's hot. I don't know if you should watch it with your parents. I really don't know.
No!
It's explicit. Okay.
No, don't watch it with your parents.
It's not like hypersexual, like it's not like explicit, like, but no, okay, but you don't see. I get what you're saying. Yeah, I wouldn't watch it with my parents, but it's not like you see things like happening. Do you know what I mean?
No.
Like there's more explicitly sexual films that we have even talked about on the pod, but it's super sexual. It's very erotic. It's BDSM. Anyway, I do recommend it. Oh my God, I love it. It's not my favorite queer film. Don't get me wrong, but I really like the tension and like I like how it's not allowed, like it's so taboo. I love how taboo it is.
Yeah, you love a forbidden love.
I do love a forbidden romance.
Yeah, me too.
And the man doesn't bother me. If you're scared about the man, he's not bothersome.
No, he's the only man that I would want in that film. Also, Luke Evans is gay in real life. So for me, I just really rate that so hard.
Excellent.
But yeah, you're right. Like, I don't remember. It's been a few years since I've seen the film and I didn't remember it to be as good as it actually is. It's a way better than I remember. I would also recommend it. It's very fun. It's just like a light... It's quite a light watch to an extent, and there's no like real queer punishment, you know. The women end up together. It's very romantic.
Yeah.
They have a family together. It's very nice.
Good vibes. Good vibes.
On that note, thank you so much, everyone, for listening to this episode of the UK Film Review Podcast. If you'd like this episode, we have been Amber and Joyce from Gay Actually. You can follow us on Instagram at Gay Actually Podcast. We also have an email address, gayactuallyuk@gmail.com. If you have any requests, you can email us, DM us. We don't mind.
We love it. We encourage it.
Joyce is thirsty for the emails, as always. So, yeah. We do episodes for the UK Film Review Podcast on the third Thursday of every month, so look out for us here. We also have our own Spotify channel, Gay Actually, where we do episodes kind of when we feel like it, but there'll be one once a month, usually before our UK Film Review episodes. So check us out over there, leave a review, listen along. We have a poll on our most recent episode, Carmilla the Web Series, where we have asked our listeners, would you like us to do an episode on the queer readings into Twilight? So if you would like that, go and vote on our poll. Yes or no, thank you. And we'll take your opinion into consideration. I know which way Joyce wants it to go. Thank you so much, Joyce, as always. It's been a joy to talk about Wonder Woman with you.
And it has been a joy to do this podcast with you.
Deep.
I know.
Thank you so much, everyone. Take care and goodbye.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.